Hi.
That's Philip.
And that's Dana.
And we're Tango. This is...
Every time.
Actually, all of our episodes are just a series of bloopers until we can say it right.
I'm wasting precious airtime. Okay, go, go, go.
Hi, everybody. That's Philip.
And that's Dana.
And we're Tango. This is Thank You for Coming. With Fiona.
Hi, Fiona.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Fiona, what's your last name?
Lowenstein.
Fiona, yeah. Lowenstein, but you go by Fee.
Yeah, either one is fine. I'm fluid with the name stuff. And the gender stuff and the sexuality stuff.
Sure, so. Aren't we all?
I mean, yes. We love fluidity. We promote fluidity. You know what's an interesting thing is that fluidity will probably be a term that should be brought into a health class.
I love
should
that.
Should it not?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it honestly might be. Already.
Really?
Maybe.
Well, like, at, like, our high school, I could see that happening.
At a more progressive high school.
Progressive, yeah. Liberal, like hippie school. Private,
yeah.
Perhaps.
Yes.
Private's a lot easier. You can do a lot of
You can
of
kind
your
of
thing.
Do whatever you want until the parents revolt. And you, then...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And they do. They
oh,
will
yeah,
revolt.
They do. They do, yeah.
They really like to create subgroups, caucuses of revolt.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and what's interesting is that they've... put their kid in like the most niche school ever that is probably like blossom to become your own person, like you can be anything you want to be. Let's even define what that is today, and then they're like, stop.
Yeah.
Yep.
I still need to control their education.
They still need to get into Harvard.
Yes, blossom to become your own person that gets into Harvard.
Yeah.
You can be your own person after
free
that.
As you want. After you get into Harvard, you can do whatever your heart desires after you go to Harvard. Which is exactly how I will be parenting.
Start saving now. So, you run something called Body Politic.
Yeah.
And tell us and the listeners out there through this microphone what Body Politic is.
Sure. So Body Politic is a queer feminist wellness collective, event series, and media startup dedicated to merging the personal and political. So we explore issues that we think are under-discussed in wellness, like the way that wellness intersects with politics and personal identity. So sexuality, race, gender, ability, financial accessibility, all of those issues, kind of looking at wellness through that political lens, and then also like examining issues in wellness and wellness trends as they pertain to those issues of personal identity.
So on topic with everything that we're thinking.
I know. So we're just making sure that everyone's on the same page. We like to like equal the playing field all these podcasts. So we try to get a sense from everyone like what their birds and the bees talk was like, whether like with your friends, with your parents, with your school. When I say birds and the bees, you say,
oh my god. not good. I mean, there's like this story that's told in my family that apparently my mom and I were on a really crowded elevator when I decided to ask her, hey mom, I know how the baby comes out, but how does it get in there in the first place?
Oh, wow.
Which like, of course, you know, everyone else on this New York City elevator was like, huh? Like, yeah. How's she gonna answer this one? And my mom had to like stall for 16 floors,
sure,
being like, well, that important question, which we'll receive an answer that I will respond to shortly. So yeah, I guess she like explained it somewhat that way. But obviously that would have been like more in the sense of like, procreation and like reproduction.
Sure.
I do recall learning the word masturbation because my dog really liked to get down with herself.
Sure. Yeah, she
and,
did.
And yeah.
Okay, that's a good way to learn about it.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And I would just be like, why is Georgia like licking her crotch all day, like so aggressively? And my parents would be like, well, you know, it could be she's cleaning herself or it could be she's masturbating. That's
good
how it came
them.
Up. Yeah.
I think my mom always used to say, like, if you could lick yourself there, you would too.
It's also kind of gets to the point.
But, like, I didn't know what she meant.
And now you're like, T, I would lick myself
too.
Yeah. So yeah, I feel like that's how it, like my parents were pretty open about that stuff. But then I had like sex ed, which was just like overall terrible, where I think we learned about anal sex in sixth grade, but we didn't learn about periods until 10th grade.
Whoa.
Yeah. So we're all like sitting there. This was public school, like sexual education in New York City. We're sitting there in 10th grade and they're like, you know, you might start to feel cramps and then there might be like, this is what might happen and you should always keep a tampon in case you get your, and we're all like, we've had our periods for 5 years. Like,
whoa. This
is, yeah, it was just like so off base and no one took it seriously.
Did you ever learn about anal sex?
Never.
I was told by like these woke ass educators, am I allowed to curse?
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
In sixth grade, which I do think was a little early, that there are three types of sex: vaginal, oral, and anal.
Pause for us to think for a moment. Oh my god. Wait.
The collective gasp. The collective gasp at that.
Well,
vaginal, anal, and oral.
Yes.
Vaginal,
you know,
anal,
it's still quite a simplification of sex.
Vaginal, anal, and oral.
Vaginal, anal, and oral. Vaginal, anal, and oral. Okay,
new
so
theme song
I have
for the pod.
Questions. We're deep into thinking about a theme song and cannot think of one, so stay tuned.
So we can
there
just
will
like,
be one soon.
Okay.
So, vaginal, anal, and oral. So, they have established in the sixth grade that all our sex
is sex.
You're having sex either vaginally, orally, or anally.
And they don't. It includes solo play in this great way. It does, and it's not heteronormative.
Where's solo play in that?
You can have solo anal sex or solo.
Oh, sure,
vaginal
sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I feel like that was not like explicitly put on the table.
Anyone see their finger in their butt?
Yeah. but true. And if we were remaking that curriculum for 2020, we would definitely share that advice.
Absolutely.
And give out some butt plugs.
All sixth graders get a butt plug. It's like when Harry Potter gets a wand. When you turn 13, everyone
gets
a butt plug.
The butt plug chooses you,
right?
Yeah.
So that's interesting because, I mean, something that we talked about in our last episode was when it's considered sex and when it's considered losing your virginity. And we basically here in your education are establishing that all are sex. There's
is
no
sex.
Like base to sex.
All sex is created equal.
Created equal.
At least in theory. I mean, that being said, like, definitely the same kind of, like, weird order of sexual acts of, like, blowjob is not sex. Like, it's not sex until this happens. That all still permeated my, like, adolescent experience.
Even being taught this.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're definitely categorizing things as, like, pre-sex, like, foreplay. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the sex, right?
Right.
And I think the sex. And very rarely is an oral moment.
The sex.
Even though it can absolutely be foreplay into more foreplay.
Sure.
Into more foreplay.
Yeah. And like, how do you tell a sixth grader that?
Yeah. I don't think we got like foreplay with a definition.
Sure.
But we did get anal sex with a definition.
That's a
pretty...
And you have something else going on is that you have it in the sixth grade and you still have it in the 10th grade. So you have continued sex ed.
Well, not really. We had it in the sixth grade and then I don't think we had it again
until the 10th grade.
We had it like here and there, but I mainly just have these two memories of how inconsistent with our age groups it was. Where like we were learning, like
maybe
some sixth graders, it would be helpful to know about anal sex. Like me at the time, it didn't make sense to me. And like none of these things were really like.
Because the butt is for poop.
Yeah.
Well, what's so weird is like it literally sounds like they swapped the folders for the curriculum.
Yes.
It was like, you're about to get your period, so let's teach you anal.
Yeah.
And then you're about to have sex now. Or... Let's go back.
By the way, that thing you've been having for the last 5 years.
This is how it works.
Yeah.
Let me mansplain your period to you.
Oh, yeah, it was for sure, dude.
I feel like when you first get your period sometimes, it's like, did I poop?
Actually what I said. Like, literally screamed at my mom, I think I pooped in my pants from the bathroom. And my mom was like.
Because, like, menstrual blood isn't really that red.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you're on, like, a heavy day.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, I don't get my period, so I actually don't remember anything about menstruation. But I remember, like, briefly, like, oh, it is not red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was definitely like, what is this brown stuff in my underpants?
Yeah.
Must be poop, because there couldn't be any other answer for it, because I'm a child.
For sure. I think for me, anal sex was introduced in like a poop hole loophole. For virginity.
The poop-hole loophole.
Wow.
Yeah. I went to a school that instilled Christian values. Come on.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a friend's dad tell us the asshole or the butthole, I can't remember what terminology he used to refer to hole. Butthole. The hole is an exit, not an entrance.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Okay.
Which I was like, sure. That makes sense.
On your phone, gay porn. Bareback, anal sex.
On your phone, butthole as entrance.
Yeah, I'm like seeing what photos come up from that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but I think the thing, like, again, I was in public school until 10th grade. So I think the thing that really categorized, or like, really, yeah, so that must have happened in ninth grade. The thing that really characterized, like, my sex ed was just, like, that it was disorganized and kind of terrible. Yeah.
So I would say we're all on the same page here about that.
We are all in Hufflepuff.
Oh, we are. All in Hufflepuff. So let's go back to body politic.
Yeah.
Where did you come up with the name? What's the origin of Body Politic, the name, the series, the company?
Yeah, so we wanted a name that would, like, really clearly get to the core of this idea that wellness is political and mm-hmm. that there is kind of no divide between the personal and the political. But we also wanted to evoke the idea of community. Which I think body politic does, right? It's a group of people, a collective of some sort. Yeah. Especially because I feel like the idea of building community is so important to wellness and is a self-care practice and a wellness practice, but it's really not something that, like, wellness under capitalism talks about a lot. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's just kind of like you as an individual do this exercise, mm-hmm. make this healthy meal, do this face mask. And I think it was Cecily Bowen at our last event, the Man Repeller event that you were at, Dana, who yeah. brought up, like, building community and building a support system, like, that's my number one, like, tip for self-care. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to kind of, like, get to the root of that. And we launched with live event programming, which was also based in this idea of really creating this community, like, this flesh and blood community. And also we wanted to see, like, are there people out there that are interested in this? And we figured if people are willing to take, you know, an hour-long subway ride and pay between, you know, $1 and $15 for an event, most likely they're gonna double click an Instagram pic or click a link or whatever. So we wanted to start with just that, like, IRL exchange of ideas. Mm-hmm. And then we actually didn't move online until a few months after that.
I love it. I love the idea of body politic having that dual messaging with the name of actually, like, the group body politic being, like, this, a group of people in itself, not just the one individual body. That's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about it that way. And especially since the body politic is speaking for, like, underrepresented bodies and creating, like, a caucus of them in a way.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's another thing is, like, you can't talk about wellness without talking about bodies. Sure. Like, you can't talk about wellness without talking about the policing of bodies, the representation of certain bodies in the wellness industry, all of that stuff. And, you know, even though we might sometimes like to escape our bodily experience through, and that's certainly a part of wellness, even the decision to do that usually comes from, like, an embodied experience.
Mm-hmm. Whether externally enforced or, like, internalized shame, homophobia, like, all the things, and, like, the shame that you put on your own body and how that makes it debilitating for you to create wellness from within.
Yeah, I feel that intensely.
Sure.
Like, I still wonder what aspects of my, like, gender identity, the way I understand my gender identity or my sexuality are things that were policed initially by others, and then I started kind of self-policing just, you know, as an effort to, I guess, survive. And this is all, I'm saying all of this, and I live in a body that, like, is really not very marginalized. Like, as a white, thin person, female presenting, I walk into most spaces, and I'm not the only person who looks like me in the room. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, women experience a lot of policing of their bodies, and that's definitely an early way that I became kind of aware of my body, was just seeing how other people were reacting to it, or trying to, you know, put confines on the way that I expressed myself, both through what I wore and also, right, people whose bodies are policed, their emotions are also often policed, the way that they express their feelings, the things they say, the clothes they wear, all of that stuff.
Oh, I love, it makes me so angry and sad, but I'm so interested right now in like early policing of bodies, and you see it a lot in like schools enforcing like uniforms and like hairstyles and makeup styles and nail polish styles, and how they're really only policing young girls, rarely policing like cis men, and how much damage that's doing to young people. I mean, I was policed and shamed so much for like uniform infractions, for my skirt being too short, and they're putting us in these like very fetishized like schoolgirl uniforms, and then asking us to be appropriate and asking us to look and represent a certain way. And yeah, and I know like a lot of people get like called in and asked to like wear different skirts, or like put their hair up if someone like had like too long of hair, too crazy hair, and or realizing very early that I was being looked at.
Yeah, totally. And also the huge discrepancies between like who is brought in and asked about this stuff, or who is policed, right? So like, you know, there've been lots of stories of two girls wearing the same length skirt, but one is plus size or fat. Yeah. And so she's being told, oh, this is hugely inappropriate, you know, because you have a curvy body.
Because you can see more skin.
Right, right. It's, you know, hitting the same place on the body, but just because of like the differences in the way these bodies looks. And then also, you know, obviously Black women have experienced this a lot. A lot of young Black girls in school, they're being policed for hair, styles. And also it doesn't stop there. Like, most of these, you know, workplaces, especially corporate workplaces, there's such a clear kind of idea of what you should look like. My mom has very curly hair, and growing up I just remember that, and again, she's white, so this is a completely different like standard of beauty going on here, but she, you know, anytime she had to like go to anything professional, she had to go get a blowout because she was just like, oh no, you wouldn't have like this kind of hair in the workplace, which is like, what?
Which is, I think when I had the semi-corporate job, I came into work every single day with wet hair.
Like, literally, you were like, stick it to the man.
Single day. If I don't shower,
you shower in the morning.
I shower in the morning.
Who blow dries their hair?
No.
Who has time?
Who has time to blow dry their hair?
No,
I'm curious about. Well, I love what you're doing with Body Politic, and I'm curious about what that transition was like going from IRL, very like solely focused on community IRL, to digital, because I mean it's heavily policed,
especially as like a queer feminist. Sorry, I'm cutting off queer feminist.
No, you can be anybody that you want IRL, but you can't be everything that you want to be when you're all of a sudden in the spotlight in a different way.
Well, also when your digital platforms are literally policing your content, especially as women. Like, if your Instagram says your gender is female, you are being policed differently by, like,
advertisers, marketing,
and and bots, and like, like the who makes the rules? Who makes the Instagram rules?
They got our rights to them.
Yeah, no, I mean the Instagram rule makers are trailing you harder and reporting you differently.
Yeah, I mean, we have not honestly had to come up against that in a huge way yet, because we only recently launched our online publication in the fall. But like, it's clear that these are going to be issues that we're going to be facing really soon. And I would say that the biggest, like, well, one of the most interesting actually things about going from, you know, the IRL programming to the online programming, we recently did a survey of our audience, and the majority of the people who responded to the survey, at least, and obviously this could be a link because, you know, there are people who are on their computers, but said that they engaged with us through our online content rather than our IRL event programming, which was really surprising, just because we sell out every event and we see some of the same faces, and we feel like that's kind of the core of like where we started and how we started. But I think it just shows how building an online community, while it has its flaws, and I'm really interested actually in the idea of like digital wellness and kind of how to balance these two things, it also is something you have to do for accessibility purposes. Like, not everyone lives in New York City, first of all. And certainly there also are like a lot more queer feminist offerings in this city than in some other places, as well as the fact that not everyone can leave their house and get to an event, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons that it's really important to us, like, fastidiously, I guess, document every event and put it online, and then now try and engage more via our publication Body Type, which, if there's any writers out there who want to pitch to us, just slide into our DMs. But
love a pitch moment.
Yeah, just, you know, had to throw it in there. But that's why we're kind of trying to ramp up that stuff to really reach. Because if we're calling ourselves accessible wellness, like, we can't only be doing things in New York City that people can come to.
Sure.
In, you know.
Okay, so what is wellness anyways?
Oh, well, I obviously know the answer to that.
Tell us. I know nothing. Tell me.
No, I'm joking. Oh, it's such a hard question. I mean, I really do think that wellness is different for everyone. And I think one of the big mistakes the wellness industry has made is assuming that wellness is kind of the same thing for everyone. Sure. That it's weight loss, first of all, which, I mean, let's never assume that it's weight loss. Certainly for some people it might be that, and we don't have to criticize that necessarily. But, you know, assuming it's weight loss, assuming even that, like, physical health is a value, or something that people are going to put above all else in their lives, right? Sure. So that's not the case for everyone as well, nor should it be. And again, you know, not to harp on this point, but capitalism makes us, like, is insidious and gives us all of these messagings, right? That we should be doing everything to make our lives as long as possible and stay as productive for as long as possible, because essentially we're just supposed to be, like, producing stuff
super
and working
American.
To... Yeah, exactly.
Super American.
Yeah. I mean, I wish we took, like, a 3-hour lunch break here, but unfortunately we don't. That's wellness, 3-hour lunch break.
Oh, no, I can't stop working. Neither can Philip.
I can't either.
Like, I mean, me too, but isn't that, like, that something about that is also, like, and obviously we love what we do a lot of the time, or I love, like, you know, most of what I do. There's also many other things I do in addition to body politics to pay the bills, not all of which I love with the same passion.
Yeah.
Sure.
But, like, even that, I mean, I feel like, you know, if you're raised in a certain way in the society, especially if you, like, identify as a high achiever, you just get this crazy messaging that, like, your worth is tied to your productivity. Mm-hmm. And also that, like, anything you participate in, any wellness you participate in, should be either to, like, help ameliorate the ills of capitalism,
sure,
which can numb you to those ills a little bit, and also cause. So I think what we're trying to do is, certainly we want to help people ameliorate the ills of capitalism, the things that they're facing at their everyday jobs, but we also want to help people to resist those things, right?
Sure.
So let's talk about capitalism for a minute and talk about...
The movement
that's happening, the wellness movement, like, not the wellness movement that we're talking about that you're in and pioneering and, like, in the trenches with, that's doing work to build community and relationships and give voice and representation.
And be holistic,
yeah. But the one that is face masks and jade rollers and weighted eye masks. But, like, you know, all of those things are nice and they're luxurious. I mean, love them. But, like, they're not gonna solve your problems.
Yeah, yeah. There, and spending money also is often not going to solve your problem,
sure,
right? So I think that's
really true.
One of the really tricky things is, like, it often feels like in order to better your life in some way, you have to just be, like, purchasing
it.
So many products.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, the one thing I would say is, I think, like, you know, the movement that we're building, I'm certainly not the only person in it, and there's a lot of other groups that are doing that great work. What's becoming really murky and confusing right now is when we first launched in 2018, like, the majority of mainstream wellness industry brands, studios, that sort of thing, were not talking about these issues at all. They were throwing up the word self-care, but, you know, in a completely apolitical context, which is especially weird because that word is rooted in politics and in political activism.
Yeah.
Whereas now you see some of these bigger brands, like, and some of this is obviously good. They're hiring more, you know, ambassadors that are representative of different communities and groups. They have ad campaigns that are more diverse, that sort of thing. But also it's, like, hard to parse what's going on, because they're still oftentimes, you know, selling you the diet industry,
mm-hmm,
or selling you stuff that's ultimately about changing yourself to fit a pretty white supremacist patriarchal image of beauty or image of wellness. But it's more insidious because they're now packaged differently and they really don't use the words diet anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Christy Harrison on her podcast. She talks about the wellness diet, which is basically, like, her phrase, for all of these, like, wellness things or quote unquote wellness things that are really just repackaging, like, the
diets,
low carb or the whatever. Yeah. The weight loss mentality into something that seems less toxic, but really in some ways is more toxic because you're less able to identify it for what it
truly is. You're pretending like you're not dieting.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And the other shitty thing about that is then if you are dieting, which, like, again, is an okay choice, you know, we understand not everyone's going to be able to resist the diet industry. We also understand that people living in bigger bodies truly do face discrimination and a lot of issues, and that not everyone is going to choose to not lose weight. Some people sure. are, you know, interested in doing it for medical reasons and all of that. Now you're in this space where, like, it's really not chill to diet because that word is evil.
Yeah.
But also everyone's still telling mm-hmm. you to diet through, yeah. like, different means. So you can't be open about what you're doing, but you're still kind of doing
it. Yeah. We've introduced a different type of shame.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And the food wellness, nutrition wellness is hard, too, because it is vital. Like, we must eat...
Yeah.
Good food.
Yeah.
However, it's either eat healthy diet, lose weight, or nothing. Or we're back on seamless every single meal. There's no balance between the two because it's all result-based and it's all about losing weight. It's not about just, like, living in your body and, like, being the happiest version of yourself that you
like
can.
Like, drinking enough water.
Right.
Yeah. And even when things like that start to come into the conversation, like drinking more water and this and that, again, oftentimes it's sort of tied in with this agenda that you may not be 100% on board with, where, yeah. you know, the subtext is drinking water will help you lose weight, right? Yeah. Or drinking water will help you have clear skin. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that it's wrong to want those things, but also how can we claim to, like, appreciate bigger bodies, appreciate skin types of all kinds, if the implicit messaging is always be skinnier, have clearer
yeah.
skin,
yeah.
you know, straighter hair, whatever it is.
Yeah, so my family does this crazy thing where once a year they do a water diet for 1 week. Every single meal, they only drink water. And after that week, they say it resets them, it makes them feel better, they lose weight. And that's, like, one of the most unhealthy things. Like, actually, like, yeah. factually, you're, like, draining your body of all of the nutrients that it needs.
Putting it into, like, a fasting mode.
Yeah. And you're, like, just atrophying, like, at a rapid pace, leaving your body mm-hmm. only with fat.
Mm-hmm.
But...
I mean... It's interesting, though, because, like, what you brought up, some of these things, right, like fasting or, like, drinking water, like, these, it's not that these are unhealthy things, and
yeah.
there's reasons that, like, many different cultures have, you know, either religious practices or cultural practices that include fasting or eating, you know, greens or whatever it is. And that's another thing that really characterizes the current, like, capitalist
yes.
wellness
uh-huh.
industry, is this taking of practices from largely communities of color, also queer communities and some feminist communities, and then reappropriating them, selling them to white audiences
as a diet,
as, you know, as a diet or a quick weight loss solution, or even maybe, like, a mental health, you know, something with mental health
yeah.
benefits. Sometimes it, again, it's more insidious. And then the money, you know, is obviously not going back to those communities of color,
sure.
as, and they're also generally
oh
being excluded
God.
From it, right?
Like, there's literally been a jade roller in my house when my, like, Paul was using it, and now I see, like, all these white girls with jade rollers, and I'm like, they don't come in purple, it's jade!
Yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow's, like, rubbing them all over her face, she's like, I invented these, yeah.
But, okay, so should we do a definition?
Let's dive into sex first. I'm gonna add it. Is that okay?
We have 15 minutes.
If we go till 45, that's
okay.
that's fine. I just have to, like, be 10 minutes away by 5
sure,
minutes.
Sure,
so,
sure.
Yeah.
No, let's dive into a definition. Let's do it.
So we're talking, I think it's a clear one. Can so
what if it? Because I loved that.
Oh, I love that. Can we do two definitions? Can we
yeah,
do something new?
Yeah, I don't
new?
Even know what
we're
this
gonna,
is.
So we're going to have you define a word.
Okay.
And, like, this is not Merriam-Webster's.
Okay.
This is whatever you want it to be. So we're going to...
It's Miriam Lowenstein.
So we're going to define fluidity, and then we're going to define wellness.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Who's we?
Well,
we
tell team. It's you.
Okay.
It's you,
okay.
But we'll...
We're going to come in for a
we're
quick
We're
going to
come in.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
We'll grade you now.
Okay, so where do we want... Let's start with wellness, just, like, since we've been talking so much about that.
Sure.
Okay, well, I personally believe wellness should be non-prescriptive. It is, I mean, ultimately, right, it's feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
Body Politic defines that as mental health, physical health, sexual health and beauty and skincare, whatever that means to you. Mm-hmm. And the idea being not that like you must be well in these four fields to be well, mm-hmm. but that hope if you're interested in wellness, which I think a lot of people are, one of those four aspects of wellness is likely going to appeal to you. And, you know, on a basic level, I think that wellness is safety. Wellness is, you know, access to obviously resources that we need to go about our day, but it is something that I think is really defined individually. Like for mm-hmm. me, it might mm-hmm. be nutritious and delicious food, but that might not be a part of your wellness or mm-hmm. your wellness. You mm-hmm. know, for you, it might be drinking water or something yeah. like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think also if we're going to define it in contrast to capitalism, maybe it is either resisting or ameliorating the ills of capitalism,
sure.
finding a way to get through like our current society. And that's why I think more of the grassroots like wellness movement comes in. And that's why I think ultimately it is so popular, is like people are fucking done with the system the way it is, and they yeah. need ways to cope with it and also ways to think about changing it. And wellness in some ways offers that.
I think that's something that's really interesting about what you just said, is the community aspect of wellness falls into that latter part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can make ourselves well. As good as we can, our bodies can feel amazing. We can be in a really mentally happy state as an individual alone. However, we might still not being fed by communities, by the yeah. people that surround us. So wellness is also the actual the people, not just people around you, but the quality of people around yeah. you.
Yeah, I was gonna say wellness for me is so much to do with my friendships. Like I need those friendships to be solid. I need them to be honest. Yeah. I need them to be fulfilling and full and really like giving and getting in a way that is community.
Yeah.
So maybe if wellness is defined differently for each person, like the definition of wellness is almost understanding what makes you feel well and then pursuing that within reason, like yeah. pursuing that within a way that also makes you feel well.
I like that
right?
definition.
I like that.
Because it is a very personal. It is personal.
Yeah.
And then so let's do fluid. I'm really yeah. interested for this
fluidity.
One. Fluidity.
I mean, I think of it as like the freedom to express yourself in ways that might seem to maybe a more traditionalist as being polar opposites. So like both in terms of like gender identity, sexuality, yeah. but also in terms of like the fact that I was even just talking about this today, because I taught a yoga class last night on like being able to speak your truth and like opening up the throat chakra. And, I was saying like, I have a really hard time with this as a people pleaser. And there were people in the class that were like, you're a people pleaser. Cause like, you know, they just know me as like this rude bitch, but like, but like I can be both. That's a ridiculous example for fluidity, but truly I think like fluidity is it has to do with not allowing yourself to be policed or resisting that policing, and like being able to kind of segue or float between different ends of a spectrum without needing to like define yourself clearly. I think it's about freedom ultimately.
Yeah, it's so much of a privilege. I think so much about my own fluidity and how resistant I am to perform any of my fluidity because of how aware I am of my privilege as a pretty thin, hetero-presenting white woman.
I just remember being a kid and an adolescent and feeling so fucking fluid and not being
yes.
surrounded by anything that gave me the context to understand what I was feeling. So I felt like I had to perform not being fluid. And I mean, there's now as an adult, having gone through that, there is power in learning how to perform not being fluid as a person.
Yeah.
Because
blending
unfortunately,
in.
Like we still live in a society where passing is privilege.
And survival
yeah.
instincts are
yes.
necessary,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
yeah.
See, the thing is when I was younger, I was never hiding fluidity.
Mm-hmm.
Never. I mean, I think in high school, people were calling me a dyke. Everyone called me a hipster. There's a Facebook group out there that is still out there called Dana is a Hipster. Dana is a fucking hipster.
I think that we officially age ourselves as a generation with the term hipster.
With the term hipster.
I know, but
yeah.
like, hey, whatever. I was 15 and everyone called me a hipster.
So just like not having the tools in order to express the way that you felt like you were publicly saved. I went off into a tangent. We should actually move on to the next, because I want to talk about how this all gets back to sex.
Yeah, so okay. I'm curious how sexual wellness becomes a priority for someone's like overall wellness, and where sexual wellness takes a role in body politic.
Yeah, so we've done it. Definitely, I want to say like every event we do touches on this topic because people love to talk about sex. And people hate to talk about sex. So like, that's why it comes up.
Well, once you start talking about sex, everyone loves talking about sex.
Yes, exactly.
No one wants to be the person to bring it up. But once it's introduced into the conversation, everyone's very game.
But you know, the person who won't shut up is actually the person that doesn't like talking about sex.
Yeah, that's so true.
They are the ones that want to talk about it ad nauseum.
It's so true.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, you know, one thing we were talking about earlier is like, how do you tell the difference between like when your body or your desires or whatever have been policed to like a really huge degree, then you sometimes end up policing yourself because you're just so used to this messaging. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that with wellness is like really, really hard to get through, is even figuring out like what you want sexually or how you identify sexually in terms of your sexuality versus like how other people are defining your sexuality or your sexual preferences. I was gonna say something else on that, but I lost my train of thought.
I mean, it'll come back to me. Yeah. 2 feet in the air next to you.
Yeah,
I think that in some ways, sexual wellness is just having some sort of foundation for your what.
I also think that sexual wellness is one aspect where like our mission of being non-prescriptive becomes really important because, and this also came up at our last event in the discussion there, but there's a lot of amazing people like on Instagram and people in the wellness world who are talking really openly about sexual wellness and their own journeys or who are offering advice. And sometimes if you're not super far along in your journey or like you're a little earlier in your journey, it can feel very intimidating actually to be like, oh shit, I'm supposed to be having orgasms every time I have sex, or like I'm supposed to be like asking for like all my kinks at day one or like whatever it is, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it also is to begin with self-selecting who's going to be finding that Instagram account.
Yes, definitely.
Right? Like the people, whether they're not far along in their journey or incredibly experienced, they're looking, right? And I think that the people looking are already in a better position than, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like that's something, right? If you stumble upon one of these accounts and you read three posts, like pat yourself on the back because that's like maybe step one or even step three or four of your journey toward, you know, sexual enlightenment or sexual wellness or whatever. I think it's just one area, and all areas of wellness can feel this way, where it's really easy to just see a bunch of people like quote unquote living their best life and feel like, what is wrong with me that I'm not there yet?
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that we're really trying to fight hard against. We want to like explore every issue in depth. We want to offer multiple perspectives on it, like hopefully no perspectives that are super triggering or shitty, but offer multiple perspectives on it. And we don't ever want anyone to feel when they're engaging with our content or our event programming that like, oh, I'm just not at the level where I'm ready for this yet, you know, because everyone has to start somewhere. And just because, you know, I'm sitting in the moderator chair or one of our panelists is sitting on the couch as a panelist, that doesn't mean that we're experts on this either, that we're not struggling with our own issues. Like, I foresee my sexual journey being very long and I think I'm only at the beginning. So you wait till I'm 75.
So you brought something up that I'd like to slightly reframe, actually.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So you brought up this term as an expert, and something that we use in our own language a lot is that we are experts of our own body, and that like we are also experts of our own wellness, and that sure, there are degrees that we can get, there's accreditations, there's training programs that you can take to feel like an expert, but at the end of the day, we all care about our own well-being. We all care about how good or not good the sex is that we have. And I think that what we all like fear is that like it's we're not an expert unless we have a degree in it.
Mm.
And that, like...
Or maybe a certain amount of, like, experiences.
Yeah. And, like, experience is experience. And, like, why can't we all just share our experiences a little bit more so that we can all just have a bit more perspective when we're making these decisions?
Well, I was going to bring up porn.
Oh, let's pivot to porn.
Well, I think that, like, experts make you think of... how do I replicate, right? Like, how do I become that, right? And I think that if someone's accredited or giving their expert opinion because they know this thing because someone said they did, you're looking to them as someone who you can mirror or mimic. And porn is, in this way, like, the universal expert of sex, and that you're looking to mimic and to replicate. And the issue with that seal of approval, that, like, this is what sex is, and, like, this is what experts say sex is, right? And an adult performer being the expert, right, is that it leaves no room for, like, failure in this way. That I think wellness has such extreme failure behind it. And I'm just so curious, like...
We're gonna pretend that there's not a cat on me right now.
Slapping you.
I currently have a cat on my person without my hands holding this cat. And we're all gonna pretend that there's not a cat on my shoulders right now and have this conversation.
Yeah, so I think I feel like one of the dangers of porn is giving porn that, like, seal of expert and seal of approval that becomes, like, the holy grail of what to mimic.
Yeah, definitely. And within that, you have, like, another kind of dichotomy of ideologies, where on the one hand you have that, and then on the other hand you have shame around watching porn. Sure. Or, you know, the idea that none of it is helpful, or that it's really gonna fuck you up sexually or whatever. So it's like, how do we find that happy medium where, like, we can still watch porn if it speaks to us, like, you know.
I love that. This porn clip just...
it just speaks to me.
It spoke to me. It just calls me. I mean, hello. Come watch me.
Porn is such an educational
tool. Thank you for coming.
Porn is such an educational tool as an adolescent.
Yes.
You know, like, you're looking for visual... there's no blog that you can go to that's going to teach you about anal like it is seeing anal, watching anal.
Yep.
But it is hyper idealistic.
Yeah, that's
I mean, similarly, like, where do you go to just see, like, vaginas, like all the parts of vaginas and, like, in action, you know?
Yeah.
Vaginas in action, you know?
vaginas in action.
But at the same time, like, if you're watching porn and mainstream porn, like, the vaginas you're seeing are not, like, the typical vagina, because there is no typical vagina,
sure.
Right? Like, it's making
well,
it
they
this
all
idea
look like
of,
there. It looks like there is a typical vagina.
Exactly.
They paint,
it gives
they
you
paint
the
a
false
picture
idea
of,
that there's a typical vagina.
Yes. And, yes, it paints a picture of one way of doing things.
Well, and you know what that teaches us is that it teaches us that sex is bad unless you look like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why, like, wouldn't it be amazing if we saw people with different looking vaginas and smaller penises that are not 10, 12 inches enjoying sex?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we see the same problem with, like, influencers and for, like, beauty. Right? And wellness and, like, yogi girls on Instagram.
Yeah.
And they it's a way, it's a one type of person. You could show me a photo of, like, 50 beauty yogi influencers and I'd be like, is that the same woman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It's the same thing where you're like, if my body doesn't look like this when I'm doing bridge pose, right? Or whatever, right? If I have to, you know, put my arms in a certain position or something to lift my weight or whatever it is, then does that mean I shouldn't be doing this pose?
Yeah.
Or does that mean, like, I shouldn't be taking this class?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to work out also. Like,
sure.
It's hard enough to work out and everyone feels intimidated doing it. And when you're walking into a space where, like, no one else looks like you, or the bodies that are represented in the teaching staff don't look like you, you're going to be less motivated to go, right? And you should never have to. This is something like I feel like has come up for me a lot personally, just because like I can easily blend into like a lot of these boutique fitness kind of populations. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes I would feel like I'm like sacrificing some of my mental health to participate in this activity that's good for my physical health.
Right.
Because I'm just like letting them be like, ladies, and I'm not saying anything, right? Or I'm letting them like make assumptions about my sexuality or my weight loss goals in quotes or whatever, right?
Right. Like you're standing in front of somebody that's like, who we're going to work for that summer bod.
Exactly.
Summer
exactly.
bods are made in winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Get ready for that bikini body. It's yeah. like, what if I don't wear a bikini? Yeah. Right? Like, what if my winter body is where it's at? Yeah.
I definitely choose my, like, instructors based on their vocabulary.
Yeah, and you're not alone. I think most people are honestly not looking for what the mainstream like boutique fitness industry is selling. Yeah. It's just this small population that's like made a deal with the devil to be down for that.
Yeah.
And you know, they're paying a lot of money for it, so that's kind of how it ends up working out. But there's if anyone listening is like, where do I go to work out and not find that? We have some resources on Body Politic. I wrote an article a few like months back that's just like kind of a listicle of studios in New York and like wellness options in New York that we really like. But also we're trying to like expand our network to know more about what's going on in other cities. And there really is, I feel like, at least one person in every city who's part of this this more community-based wellness movement, this more inclusive and accessible wellness movement. And it takes, you know, a lot of research, and it should not take that much research. No.
But then
it
at
is
the same
there.
Time, I think that like there are instructors that feed different people, mm-hmm. and someone that doesn't necessarily feed or speak to me for the reasons we've outlined about like inclusivity do work for someone else. And, like, I've noticed that about, like, the yoga studio I go to is very self-selecting about, like, who's in what classes. And it's about, like, not giving up on a studio or a gym because you had, like, one bad experience and realizing that, like, there might be other instructors that are speaking there to you.
Yeah, totally. I will push back on that a little bit just to say that at the same time, it's totally fair to give up on a studio or a gym if you have a triggering experience. And that also, I do think having, you know, worked with a boutique fitness company now for a little while as an instructor, the onus is also on the studio to like perpetuate the culture that they want.
Sure.
And so you can definitely find individual instructors who teach at studios that maybe don't have as inclusive or accessible a mission. Sure. The ideal is obviously to teach somewhere where like people, where like everyone. Instructor is getting a trauma-informed training. Every instructor knows how to teach to bigger bodies, etc.
That's great that you brought that up. So we're going to link Body Politic's website in the description, and please check them out for resources, for community, both IRL, digitally. Thank you so much for sitting with us today, Fee. This was a great conversation, and we're so excited to keep this going. We're going to be continuing to do work in collaborations with Body Politic as Tango. So continue to check them out.
Yeah, and thank you for coming.
And thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, guys.
Hi, everybody.
So it's still us.
And we're still Tango. A new sex company for everybody.
And everybody.
We'd like to thank all of our listeners for the support that we've gotten so far. We are so excited to be releasing new episodes bi-weekly for your pleasure.
And to show our love to you, we've made a promo code just for you. Check out the Tango plug, or tote, or both.
Use code THANKYOUFORCOMING to get 15% off of your first Tango purchase at
www.tangowith.us. Thank you for coming.